It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Yes, in America, there is too much money in politics. Too much entrenched partisanship, too little participation by citizens, in part because of a patchwork of laws that makes it harder to vote. That while we've made our share of mistakes over these last 25 years, and I've acknowledged some, we have strived, sometimes at great sacrifice, to align better our actions with our ideals. And we can only realize the promise of this institution's founding to replace the ravages of war with cooperation if powerful nations, like my own, accept constraints. Sometimes I'm criticized in my own country for professing a belief in international norms. I've noticed as president that at times both America's adversaries and some of our allies believe that all problems were either caused by Washington or could be solved by Washington. And perhaps too many in Washington believe that as well. So just as I pursued these measures here at home, so has the United States worked with many nations to curb the excesses of capitalism, not to punish wealth, but to prevent repeated crises that can destroy it. A society that asks less of oligarchs than ordinary citizens will rot from within. In advanced economies like my own, unions have been undermined, and many manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Surely we can rally our nations to solidarity while recognizing equal treatment for all communities, whether it's a religious minority in Myanmar or an ethnic minority in Burundi or a racial minority right here in the United States.
All right. And it goes on and on. That's a clip from Grabian. And that was 11 different times the president of the United States speaking for the last time as president in the UN General Assembly. Criticized his own country 11 different times. He talked about himself a great deal. I think that's really not too much of a surprise, is it? He talked about how wonderful globalism is. He called it a collision of cultures, but urged countries to embrace liberal democracy and internationalization. Of course he would, because he loves it, and we see how well it's worked. He talked about borders and sort of hinted at Donald Trump's wretched suggestion that there should be borders. That's appalling to him. He talked about a liberal world order under siege. And you get it. You know, it goes on and on. And I would talk more about that, except thank God he's leaving. I mean, I have to say, every time I heard the announcer say it's Barack Obama's last speech to the UN, I said, yes. Thank you, Lord. It's the last time he's going to have he'll be wearing the mantle of President of the United States. He's done so much damage. By the way, on practical matters, of course, he still has tremendous influence, and he's still doing, he said, remember, very clearly last year that he would make the very most of every day and moment he had until he left office to advance the cause for which he is so committed. And so on top of that, of course, is refugees, not vetting immigrants, accelerating the number that he's bringing into the country. And so Senator Jeff Sessions is actually, he just wrote an article. He said that Obama is picking the UN over America in a push for 110,000 more refugees. Senator Sessions is the chair of a now postponed Wednesday hearing, and he ripped the administration on Tuesday, claiming it was just the latest example of an out-of-control White House pushing President Obama's personal agenda. These are his actual words. He said, despite having sufficient notice of a statutorily required hearing regarding its plans for refugee admissions program in fiscal year 2017, the Obama administration has once again elected to subordinate both its relationship with Congress and the legitimate concerns of the American people to advance the agenda of the United States. And then he goes on to talk about the reckless plan to admit 110,000 refugees beginning in October, on October 1st of 2016, of course, right away. And not to be left behind, George Soros, who is leading the campaign for Hillary Clinton, certainly financially, he pledged Tuesday to invest up to $500 million in programs and companies benefiting migrants and refugees fleeing, of course, he says, life-threatening situations. But that's why they are labeling them Syrian refugees, because they officially can be considered fleeing a war-torn area, even if they're not Syrian. They have no papers to prove where they come from. And this is done on purpose so that we don't quite know. And let me just stop for a second, because David Lee Miller did a great report last night on what he heard at the UN from the president. Let's listen.
The president's speech was part victory lap, morality lesson, and finger-pointing. He did not mention the recent domestic terror attacks or failed truce in Syria. Instead, he focused on what he called the mindless medieval menace of ISIL or ISIS. He emphasized diplomacy, acknowledging its role in resolving the civil war.
And our international community must continue to work with those who seek to build rather than to destroy. And there is a military component to that. It means being united and relentless in destroying networks like ISIL, which show no respect for human life. But it also means that in a place like Syria, where there is no ultimate military victory to be won.
The president also lashed out at Russia for its territorial ambitions.
If Russia continues to interfere in the affairs of its neighbors, it may be popular at home. It may fuel nationalist fervor for a time, but over time, it is also going to diminish its stature and make its borders less secure.
While never mentioning Donald Trump by name, he seemed to evoke and criticize Trump's agenda.
Today, a nation ringed by walls would only imprison itself. So the answer cannot be a simple rejection of global integration.
The president's speech lacked its usual applause lines. He did, however, get a laugh.
I've noticed as president that at times both America's adversaries and some of our allies believe that all problems were either caused by Washington or could be solved by Washington. And perhaps too many in Washington believe that as well.
All right. You know what? I'm going to interrupt this report because you get the gist of it. We've heard enough. We know what he said and we know what he's trying to do. By the way, the mayor of New York wrote an op-ed with the mayors of London and Paris claiming terrorism committed by refugees is vanishingly rare. He has the audacity to write that on the heels of the multiple attacks in New York and New Jersey over the weekend. It's just amazing. And we know more about him, Ahmad Khan Rahami, and his connections with terrorism now. He was a fan of Osama bin Laden. He certainly was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki, who is, of course, dead now, but did a lot to stir up Islamists in the West. He said, "My heart, I pray to the beautiful, wise Allah, do not take jihad away from I beg." This is what he wrote before he committed the acts that he did, which could have killed so many people. And so here we are. And now on a practical level, the House is poised to vote on what's called a continuing resolution. I talked about it a little bit with you yesterday. Congressman Jim Bridenstine is totally opposed. And we played a video in which he expresses it beautifully. We put it on our Facebook page, and I encourage you to listen to it. Doug McElway sort of talked last night about how this affects this refugee funding and vetting of so-called Syrian refugees. Let's listen.
Even before the three terror attacks of this weekend, 38 House members signed a letter to the House GOP leadership urging a suspension of the administration's Syria, Middle East, and North Africa refugee programs. The recent attacks have added new impetus.
Indeed, we've already seen this, with Orlando, with San Bernardino, Chattanooga, and the attacks just in the last couple of days. This is our future. And when the administration seems to be communicating to the American people that we better get used to this, I don't think so.
Also adding to the urgency for Congress to act, the recent Inspector General's report showing how DHS accidentally made citizens out of 858 immigrants who were supposed to have been deported, people from dangerous parts of the world. One senator believes the IG grossly understated the number.
We believe there are more than 900 additional, so a total number of around 1,800, that had their fingerprints managed in a different way. Hardly anybody's reported on that yet, but we think the current number probably exceeds 1,800 and may well grow larger. This is just magnificent bureaucratic incompetence by DHS.
Republican Congressman Brian Babin wants to attach his proposal to suspend the refugee program to the ongoing negotiations over the continuing resolution to fund the government past September 30th. He says the House leadership has been responsive to his plea.
So, and I just hope that my colleagues in the House will get this into that CR and get it passed.
But one House leadership aide told Fox News the chances of suspending the refugee program are zero. The reason? Congress is tied up in delicate negotiations over the continuing resolution, with Zika funding and a 9/11 lawsuit bill still unresolved. Republicans are gun-shy about including another add-on that would suspend the refugee program because they've taken blame for government shutdowns in the past, and Democrats are more than willing to try again.
So you get the gist of it, don't you? Here we go again. Here we are again. The Congress, just not that far from where I'm sitting, convening this morning to probably pass a CR that funds all of this so-called refugees resettlement, all of everything that the president is asking for. Because, gee, we wouldn't want to, you know, shut down the government. Of course, there are other considerations in the bill as well. But we'll see. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we are wrong. I'll tell you one thing that might help. Numbers USA is really asking for their members to call and ask there be a moratorium on refugee resettlement from terrorist sponsoring countries in this short-term CR. Congress should not add 198,000 low-skilled foreign workers. And by the way, I just read an article this morning that McDonald's has let go several of its American-born executive. I don't know if it's, I think it's executives. I read just the headline, but it must be executives. And they are replacing them with foreign-born workers under the H-1B visa program, which is being expanded in this bill. That's why Numbers USA and others, Congressman Bridenstine, are saying, no, 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 we can't do this. And so if you haven't called your congressman this morning, you might want to do that and say, don't provide for any more refugees, bringing refugees into this country. Stop it right now. We need a moratorium. And none of these low-skilled foreign workers. Stop this. Now, it's interesting to me, Chairman Flores, Bill Flores, who is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, he is like so many of, most of them, I have to say, who feign that they are conservatives when they're in their district. They write things that sound conservative, but they don't do anything that would jeopardize their relationship with leadership or would cause any political damage to their party. They are unwilling to stand up. And so I got an email from Chairman Flores this morning. He's claiming that the CR does all these wonderful things. It stops the Obama internet giveaway, he says. It stops funding for Planned Parenthood. But I have to tell you that Heritage Foundation and other staffers that I know well say that's not true. And so here we go again. It's like we're at a point where we can't even trust what they say. And we know that now. I'm speaking of Republicans who are pretend as though they're conservatives, but really aren't. They deceive their voters. And then they come back here, and then they do whatever comports to their best interest. Now, one of the reasons they don't want to take hard votes here is because they want to get out and they want to go back and campaign. But we need to put pressure on them to do the right thing, certainly on funding refugee resettlement and on the dangers. We all know about the dangers. I don't have to recite them to you. And why they wouldn't stop and ponder that is beyond me. So, there you go. That's the way the show starts this morning. Next is Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, who's been involved in something really interesting in the past few months that we have not discussed. It has to do with going after abortion clinics that sell human baby body parts. She'll tell us about that. She has a different view on the CR, which you'll find out, and we'll talk to her when we return. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
GOP lawmakers are launching multiple efforts to strip Planned Parenthood of federal funding in the wake of two undercover videos showing Planned Parenthood-affiliated doctors discussing the transfer of organs and body parts harvested from aborted fetuses.
I really think the time has come in our country to debate, do people want their taxpayer dollars going to this kind of procedure?
Yet Senate Republicans appear split on how to move forward, with some dispute about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's decision to fast-track a standalone measure offered by 2016 contender Senator Rand Paul. Senator Mike Lee had hoped to offer a defunding measure as an amendment to the highway funding bill during a rare Sunday session, but was not permitted to do so because of Senate procedural rules. McConnell critics argued that a standalone measure will have a much tougher time with multiple 60-vote procedural hurdles to clear.
Will never come up for a vote. Or two, if it does come up for a vote, it'll be under a 60-vote threshold designed to fail. And the Washington cartel loves to have empty show votes.
In her first interview since the videos were released, Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards said her organization has done nothing illegal and wants the group behind the videos, the Center for Medical Progress, to be investigated.
The folks behind this, in fact, are part of the most militant wing of the anti-abortion movement that has been behind, you know, the bombing of clinics, the murder of doctors in their homes and in their churches.
After tweeting her support for Planned Parenthood last week, California Attorney General Kamala Harris committed to looking into the group behind the videos to determine whether it has violated any state laws after a request from Democratic lawmakers.
Everybody's calling for an investigation of Planned Parenthood. Let's have an investigation of those people who were trying to ensnare Planned Parenthood in a controversy that doesn't exist.
Over the last decade, Planned Parenthood has received more than $4 billion in federal and state funding.
All right, that's an old clip, and you're wondering, why is she playing that? I'm playing that to take us back in time, because we spent not a small amount of time, about a year ago, talking about those unbelievable videos coming out of Planned Parenthood clinics around the country, where we saw body parts, we heard discussions of sales, of getting rich, selling them. It's amazing. It really sort of shook the ground beneath our feet, many of us even who have been pro-life for years. And there was a big discussion, and there was a lot of dissent on how to handle that. And I think in the end, many of us were very disappointed that our Congress didn't choose to do everything they could to stop it. Well, they made that decision. They didn't stop it when they funded the government, but they did do something that's significant, and it's something that we need to talk about. They established a panel. It's an investigative panel that was and is in the process of doing a detailed research of what's going on in abortion clinics. Are they selling body parts? Who's doing this, and how are they doing it? And the person they chose to chair this is someone, this is the first time she's been my guest, is Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. She represents the 7th District in the great state of Tennessee. She was a businesswoman who's been serving us for a long time, strong pro-life, and a perfect choice to head this committee. Thank you for joining me, Congresswoman.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, it's good. You know, you bring your business acumen to this process of investigating a business. I should ask how that has helped you. Do you think that's changed your view or helped you to see things you wouldn't normally have seen?
Well, one of the things that we have realized we needed to do, and yes, you know, you bring a business processes to bear. Everybody brings their experience to Congress. But looking at the relationship between the abortion clinics and these middlemen that are trafficking the body parts, when you see some of the information that has been sent to us, when you see the pamphlets that the middlemen have distributed, when you know that these abortion clinics are put under contract by the middlemen, then you realize that it has changed the relationship. So you say, what is the product or what is the profit center that has caused this relationship? And what we've come to realize is the profit center has become that woman who is seeking the abortion and that unborn baby.
As you were, now we should, before I ask you more questions about what you're learning, let's talk about this. You have a March Bell, I'm not sure what March's title is. Is he the chief investigator, chief prosecutor? How
March is our chief legal counsel and our staff director.
All right, so you have been actually doing this now for nearly 6 months, I'm guessing.
Yes, we started at the first of the year, and we are a select investigative committee that will stand up for 1 year. And, Sandy, at the end of that year, we will go out of existence. We just recently, during the summer, did a midterm report, an interim report, to let people know, kind of give them an idea of what we were, what information we were finding. And then what we will do at the end of the year is to add to that with a comprehensive report. We have pulled together and have issued 36 subpoenas. Wow. These are to entities that we feel may have been in violation of the law. You know, it is illegal to sell any fetal tissue, any body part in this country for a profit. So it is important that we take the steps to find out what is going on in this. And we've been encouraged by those that are in the research community, those that use the organ donor program, to find out what is going on with the profit motive in the selling of body parts. It concerns them as well as concerning us for the life of the unborn and for these unsuspecting women who find themselves in a waiting room and approached by someone asking them to sign a consent form to donate their fetus when they have that abortion.
So, bottom line, and anybody that was watching the videos, and after a while, I know they were just so difficult to watch that many people never did even see them. But we did get a hint that women were being sort of misled. And finding out in retrospect.
Yeah, I think, and we, in our first hearing, when we looked at the ethics of fetal tissue research, what we focused on was, you know, the ethical framework around this issue of fetal research, fetal tissue research, looking at how it's been utilized or not utilized or why it would be needed. And in that, we looked at this consent form, and every one of our witnesses, whether Democrat or Republican witnesses, agreed that the form was misleading.
In the sense that they didn't really understand that their baby's parts, hearts, brains, kidneys, eyes would be potentially harvested and sold. They had no idea about
that
part. They were never asked that.
That's right. And people can go to my website, blackburn.house.gov, and follow the link that will carry them to one of these forms. They can get into the exhibits that we have in the interim report. And it just shows you, it says, will you donate to for finding the cure to breast cancer and prostate cancer and Alzheimer's?
And who would say no to that?
Things of that nature.
Who would say no to that?
Yeah.
You know,
that's
right.
And so it is very misleading.
Because so
they are donating it to someone who's going to sell it, and no, it's not going to be used for that. It is not used in that research.
Now, your committee was not actually, you did not title yourselves, nor did I don't think, you made it your mission to specifically examine Planned Parenthood. But did you find that selling baby body parts was a widespread practice? Oh, Planned Parenthood is the largest.
What we are tasked with doing is reviewing the abortion industry at large and the medical practices of the abortion industry at large. Now, Planned Parenthood is the single largest provider. They provide about one-third of all abortions that take place in the country. And there are just over 1,000 physicians that do abortions. And you've got, I think it's 512 abortion clinics in the country, and a little over 250 of the RU486 clinics. And so we're looking at the entire component of these clinics. We are also looking at the procurement organizations, and we have found 8 of those organizations that are in the business of reselling body parts.
The one that we learned about in the videos was Stem Express. That's what you're talking about, right?
An
organization like that. And so was Stem Express the big dog in this whole nefarious process, as far as you can tell so far?
Well, they are one of, and they may be, I don't think they're the largest, but they are right up there at the on the end of being one of the larger and more prolific and aggressively working to grow their business. They were listed in Biz Journal's fastest growing companies and were quite proud as they gave their interviews of their success, of their fast growth. And so, yes, when you look at the fact that U.S. Code Title 42, USC 289 G2, makes the selling for profit of fetal body parts and tissues a 10-year felony. If you want to donate it, you can donate it. But if you reap a profit, it is a felony offense. So it behooved us to do some investigations and to look at this.
My understanding is you've had some incredible testimony already, and I guess the interim report reflects that, and there's going to be more.
It does, yes.
And you and I need to talk again about this, but let me just say, repeat what you just said. If people want to know more of the details of what you found, and I know there are some astounding things. You can see it at blackburn.house.gov, blackburn.house.gov. Before we leave it, what was the one thing that you heard? Surely you went into this knowing a lot. What was the one thing that you heard in testimony that really, really stirred you?
The thing that was most shocking to me was that we actually went online to one of these procurement businesses, and they had a website. And when you went onto the website, you could hit the drop-down box, and you could order the fetal organ that you wanted, the gestational age of the organ. You could pick the date you wanted it for delivery, and you could check out just like you were at any retail site. And it was amazing to me, the callous nature of just looking at that woman and child as a profit center. And then the fact that someone would go online and pick out a heart, lung, liver, brain, finger, toe, scalp, whatever, and would order it at a 16-week or 20-week or 12-week gestational age, I found it very disturbing.
Has the investigation had any effect on that? Has it slowed, stopped? Have businesses shut down? That now that the light is being shined on what they're doing?
I have heard that one of the procurement organizations, one of those businesses, has gone out of business. We are hearing that some abortion clinics have closed their doors. We're just continuing to work through the process and do the job that's in front of us and work toward the end of the year.
All right, let's get to something that's happening this Saturday, because I know that you are going to be featured with Congressman Dave Brat, who's a frequent guest. We have, the world of Congressman Brat, and you are appearing with him at the DoubleTree Hotel in Richmond Midlothian, this Saturday at 3:30 in the afternoon. Now, is this a public event, Congresswoman?
Yes, it is something that Congressman Brat and the party are doing there in Richmond. And what we are going to do is to greet people, welcome them, talk with them about the election that is coming up, talk about the issues, and just have a great afternoon.
All right, so my understanding is it starts at 3:30, and I do think, hang on a second, I think somebody just sent me, here's how that people can find out about it. I think you have to RSVP. The event is free with an RSVP. That's why I understand the RSVP can be given at davebratt.com, rally the vote. Davebratt.com, rally the vote. And the idea is to rally the vote for the 7th District, right?
Right. It is to rally the vote for these elections that are coming up and will be November 8th. And I am just so pleased to join Congressman Brat and be there in his district.
I know he's going to be glad to have you, too. So can I ask you about one more thing? Do you have 5 more minutes or no?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Because this, bring the Planned Parenthood discussion to what's happening now. And even now you might get interrupted to have to go vote. I don't even know where this stands. But the whole business of the Zika virus, the CR, and the conflict between funding, fighting the Zika virus, which would also go to a good percentage of it to Planned Parenthood, is a huge battle in your house right now. And so explain that to us and how what we should think about this.
Well, there is nothing that goes specifically to Planned Parenthood. It will go to Medicaid providers to handle the virus. And the Democrats in the Senate wanted one Planned Parenthood clinic in Puerto Rico that is not a Medicaid provider to be able to get funds. I think we're going to be able to work this out if we follow the funding that is in place and we follow the Hyde Amendment language. We should be able to work this out.
Well, you know, a lot of people are totally opposed to this CR for a number of reasons, for the things that it funds. Where do you stand on this, Congresswoman? Are you in favor of a short-term CR?
Well, my preference would have been to get a CR that would take us into early next year. But I also know that if we do a short-term CR, Sandy, what that's going to give us the opportunity to do is to exercise, take the actions on the appropriations bills that we have already passed. The House has passed 6 of the 12 appropriations bills. And when you talk about funding our military, and that is something that has passed both houses, we would like to be able to have that function from the language in the appropriations bill and instead of from the CR. And the reason that is important, you take a district like mine where you have Fort Campbell and you have the need to be able to let those contracts so that our men and women that are being deployed are going to have what they need to do their job. See, they can't let those contracts on a CR. They can let it if they get an appropriations bill that is signed into law. So the hope would be that we could take some action on those 6 bills that we have passed and do those kind of as a minibus and therefore get some of the House's instructional language, which includes conservative wins, and put that on the book so that we can do some reining in of the EPA. We can block the waters of the U.S. We can provide the military with what they need. So, you know, there are going to be reasons. And if you do a CR, then what you're doing is giving, if you do a longer-term CR, what you do is give the power of the purse to the bureaucracy. And people are tired of that. They want Congress to handle the appropriations. And it could end up, we'll know more in a couple of days, but it could end up being the only way we can take the action on the appropriate bills that we have passed is to vote for a shorter-term CR and then come back to that. That may be the best way that we have to protect life and to protect and supply our military and to stop some of this bureaucratic overreach. So we're working through it, and we're trying to figure out what is going to be the best conservative approach.
Well, it is something that is absolutely dividing the caucus. There's no question about that, because you know as well as I do that others feel so strongly there should not be a short term. But are you up for you're up for re-election in your own sure. in your own district. Do you have an opponent? Do you have a strong opposition, or are you in a pretty sure seat?
I'm in a Republican.
All right. So then you can go and help Congressman Dave Brat on Saturday, which we need to repeat.
That's right.
All right. Let me repeat. Right. It's going to be Congresswoman Blackburn will be with Congressman Dave Brat this Saturday at Richmond, Virginia at 3:30. It'll be at the Coger Center. No, the Doubletree Hotel, Richmond, Midlothian. And so if you'd like to go to Dave Brat's, DaveBrat.com, and you can sign up and go and join them and just talk to them and kind of figure out how to sort of rally the vote in the 7th District. For this election. One last question. Have you supported?
They're telling me that I've got to go.
All right. Well, then, in that case, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for making time for us today,
you
Congresswoman.
Thanks so much.
All right. My pleasure. All right. That was Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. And it's interesting because I can tell you that congressmen feel very differently about this, conservative congressmen. Many of them in the Freedom Caucus are rallying to stop the short-term CR. In fact, Heritage has just issued what they call a warning over the CR in regard to Planned Parenthood. This is their statement on it. The Heritage Foundation is already calling the continuing resolution, which includes funding for the Zika response, a raise for Planned Parenthood. Negotiations on the legislation are not yet finalized, but Democrats say that the prohibition on funding for a Planned Parenthood partner in Puerto Rico has been eliminated. It's shameful that Planned Parenthood and its congressional allies were able to hold emergency health funding hostage until Big Abortion got a cut of the new money. That's a quote by Heritage Foundation's Roger Severino. He says Congress should fund compassionate and life-giving care with taxpayer funds, not an abortion industry that has disqualified itself by placing profits over respect for human life. You remember that we had quite a fight over this because the leadership in the House does not want to take a hard stand on this. They want to defer things to later. Part of what's in consideration also is the funding for the resettlement issues, the refugee problem, the lack of vetting for so-called Syrian refugees, and that's part of what's going to be funded in the short-term CR2. So it is extremely controversial. By the way, Congressman Dave Brat will be our guest tomorrow. We'll ask him his opinion on that because I'm curious. All right, I'm going to take a break. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, America, it's time for a riddle. What is understood but never named? Always present but never heard? Never spoken but... All right, forget this. I'm talking about the word cisgender. Don't know what the word cisgender means? That means you probably are cisgender. Cis is a prefix that means on the same side of. So if you're cisgender, it means that you identify on the same side of the sex you were assigned at birth. Here's another way to think about it. Gender identity is like a game show, and doctors are the contestants.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That is actually a clip from NBC Out. And if you have, you know, kids in your home, if you've got young people, kids in college, kids in high school, this is the kind of stuff they hear all the time. And that's why, you know, when our kids are asked about how they feel about gender identity and all of the other complications that we face in our world right now, they are confused. And that's why we're going to talk about something right now, something practical that American Family Association is working on to sort of draw in millennials and sort this thing out. And to talk about it is Wes Weilman. He's the director of outreach for AFA. He's also the social media coordinator of Engage Magazine. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Sandy, for being on the program. It's such an honor to listen to your program, but it's even more of a pleasure to be a part of it.
Oh, now that's very sweet. Hey, Wes, remind us, your magazine, Engage, is it specifically for millennials?
Yes, it's very specific toward the millennials based off of the circumstances and situations they find themselves in. But the content and the truths behind it are applicable to any age. There's a couple, several articles, you know, about racism and about millennials leaving the church and all types of articles that are very applicable to our grandparents and our parents' age. In fact, quick story, real quick, we've had several youth pastors and young adult leaders who have contacted us saying, "Thank you for your articles. I know your target is the millennials, but you've helped us understand the conversations and the things that y'all are going through." So, hopefully, we're ministering to people outside the millennials, but that's our target.
Well, let me just while we're on this, this is not actually the point of our discussion, but if you were interested, if it piques your interest and you're listening, it's engagemagazine.net, engagemagazine.net. But Engage Magazine and others are partnering together to host a conference for millennials called C2R. What in the world does that mean?
Yes, C2R stands for Created to Reflect, and that stems from a Bible verse in the very first chapter of our Bible in Genesis chapter 1. And in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, God says, "So God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him. male and female, he created them. And that's what we want to stem our theme and our mission for this conference is understanding biblical manhood, biblical womanhood, and how those roles play out in society. And we've got an article up on EngageMagazine.net on why marriage matters to single Christians. So there's a purpose in God's design and for culture, for the society and for the family. And we want to bring those truths of Scripture. And by doing so, and the way we're going to do that is have apologists like Sean McDowell and Alex McFoyan on site to help answer questions at a discussion roundtable, but also to provide some apologetics in their teaching. So they'll be some of the main speakers there.
So let me get practical. The dates are March 17th and 18th next spring. That's 2017. It'll be here before we know. March 17th and 18th of 2017. And you can register at EngageMagazine.net. That's EngageMagazine.net. Again, the name of the conference spelled out is Created to Reflect. Created to Reflect. Wes, if the place were packed, who would you hope would be in that audience?
If the place is packed, we would just love to see hundreds and hundreds of high school, college students, and young adults from all over America there for this one-day conference. Now, the night before, we'll provide a concert with a bunch of Christian hip-hop artists who are just really well-known and well-respected for their biblical stance and their Christianity on the college campus, and they'll be there the night before. But the day of the conference, it's a one-day conference from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock that afternoon. And we would just love to see tons of college students and young adults who are really passionate about understanding. You know, Sandy, the thing that really really drives me to do what I do for Engage is the lack of biblical worldview in the Christian camp. That kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but there's George Bonham put out a study that said just recently in the last couple of weeks where 8 or 9% of Christians actually have a biblical worldview. So amongst all my Christian friends that are millennials, they really, really lack a biblical worldview. And it's hard for them to defend something that they don't understand or they don't necessarily believe, although they're going to church and, you know, claiming the role of Christianity. And I'm not here to decide. You or I can't really determine the eternal state of someone's soul. But if they're claiming Christianity, then there's male and there's female, and that's what the Bible says.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's really kind of stunning that it's become so confusing. If we were to go back and listen to that entire clip that we just played from NBC Out, it's just stunning in its absurdity. And yet this is what kids are taking in as truth, and they don't know. You know, they hear this in school, they see this on, you know, videos and on mainstream sources. They just don't understand. Let me repeat that this conference is going to be March 17th and 18th of 2017. So maybe there's some parents listening to Wesley, and also some friends who think, hey, my buddy would love this. So it's EngageMagazine.net, EngageMagazine.net. It'll be at Hope Church in Tupelo. Do you have a place where you're putting them up, or is there a place where they could stay? How's that going to work?
You're talking about for the students and the young adults that come?
Sure.
Yes. There's several different hotels here locally. A lot of Christian business owners that are hotel owners that would love to have you stay there. We don't on our website, or we don't have a place specifically that we've locked arms with in partnership to have them. But they can just Google Tupelo, Mississippi, and from there there'll be several hotels that are very reasonable when it comes to finances and affordability here locally, and we love to do that. Unfortunately, Sandy, I'd love to have everybody stay over at my house, but
that's a great idea. Let me give your address.
Yeah,
let
exactly.
me give your phone number and your address. What's like?
But all seriousness, it would be great though to have it packed out, and we can hold. There's 800 seats available, and at that point, then we have to get the fire marshals are going to stop us. So we have. So if you want a ticket to go, you go to engagemagazine.net/conference, or just go to engagemagazine.net. There's a tab there. We love to please spread the word to the young adults and the millennials and within your arm's reach. We love to have them here. This is way more than just a conference, because this is going to be very engaging, which is the name of our division, Engage Magazine. And we're going to engage them by allowing the audience to tweet in questions, to ask questions, and we'll have a roundtable discussion, breakout sessions that involve a lot of you are engaged authors as well. So,
wow, that sounds like fun. I think I might have to, you know, wear a disguise and come join you. Let me, we only have a couple of minutes left here, Wesley. Do you think that millennials growing up in this generation and in this culture and this time have ears to hear what you're going to be teaching?
You know, that's a good question. I really think they do. I think it's a lot, and this is just my opinion, I think it's a lot smaller than we think. But I know there are Christians out there. I know there's millennials out there that are just not equipped to answer the questions and not equipped to take a bold stand for their faith, especially in this particular area. You know, ever since the Supreme Court made a wrong decision by redefining marriage, ever since that, we knew that the next effect would be what we see in North Carolina and HB2. The next effect would be what they've tried to do on these elementary schools these schools by telling them that they have to change their bathroom to unisex bathrooms. We knew this was going to happen after the Supreme Court made a wrong decision on redefining marriage. So what we're trying to do at Engage Magazine is to try to combat that and provide some biblical worldview on this specific topic of biblical manhood and biblical womanhood.
Well, the thing about the biblical worldview is that it's truth. And when people hear it properly presented, they go, oh, wow, now this all makes sense. Just
yes.
Like when we come to Christ, maybe in adulthood, things that didn't make sense began to become clear to us. And that's what we're trying to do with this. It's called, again, the C2R. It's the Created to Reflect Conference. It's going to be March the 17th to the 18th of 2017. If you've got a person in your life, ages 15 to 35, that you would like to recommend this to or send, or if you're one of those people, you can go to engagemagazine.net, engagemagazine.net, and put your name in the pot so
yes.
that you can come and join them. Wesley
Wildman.
That's
my brother.
Yeah, I know that. Wesley Wildman, thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk again before you have the conference.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sandy. Thank you for your program. Keep fighting.
Oh, you know I will. All right, this has been Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.